Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. At last night's first presidential debate, Donald Trump interrupted Joe Biden almost every time he spoke. He changed the subject whenever an actual issue was raised, especially COVID and the almost 206,000 people who've died from the virus, and he refused to condemn white supremacists. When Biden said Trump should condemn the Proud Boys, a far-right extremist group, Trump said, quote, "Proud Boys stand back and stand by," end quote. The Proud Boys posted a logo with Trump's words, "Stand back, stand by." Christian Picciolini, a former neo-Nazi who now leads the Free Radicals group, told Democracy Now! This morning that Donald Trump's words were a clear call for continued violence from far-right groups. Trump also continued to spread lies about mail-in voting, saying, quote, "I'm urging my supporters to go to the polls and watch very carefully," end quote. Joe Biden responded to all of this by saying, "You're the worst president America has ever had." So what did you make of what we saw last night? Should there be another debate given all of the chaos? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Joining us to talk about this is Joshua Holland, a contributor to The Nation. Joshua is also host of Politics and Reality Radio. Hi, Joshua. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me. The new podcast is called We've Got Issues.
Oh, We've Got Issues. Well, yes. What a name, especially after what we saw last night. We definitely have issues.
Yep.
I mean, where do you even start with this, Joshua? What really stood out for you?
I mean, it was a 90 minutes of just dumpster fires, the most chaotic, incoherent debate that anyone's ever seen, I think, at presidential level anyway. And for me, you can boil down the entire 90 minutes to the two moments that you spoke about in the introduction, Trump telling the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by, immediately followed by lying and saying that the left is responsible for the lion's share of political violence in this country. That is the opposite of the truth in the post-Vietnam War era. And then talking about, you know, calling his supporters to go down to polling places and monitor the vote, and then that was followed by a lie about poll watchers being thrown out of polling places in Philadelphia. He said that was because bad things happen in Philadelphia. The real story there is that a Trump supporter claiming to work for the campaign went to a elections office in Philadelphia. The polls are not open at this point, and demanded to be admitted into this building where they're practicing social distancing. And she was not a certified poll observer, and she was not admitted into the building. So he's building this, you know, false narrative about, and he has been for 6 months, this false narrative about widespread voter fraud being the only way that he will not, the only way that he'll be denied a second term. And it's just extraordinarily, extraordinarily dangerous. I think at this point, some violence around the election is almost guaranteed as a result of his rhetoric and mendacity on this. And we're at a point where we'll see how widespread it is. I don't think that it's avoidable at this point.
So let's talk a little bit about this and how you think the media should focus on this. Because, again, Trump saying Proud Boys stand back and stand by. Trump's son, Don Jr., posted a tweet yesterday called "Enlist Now, Defend Your Ballot." He said, quote, "We need every able-bodied man and woman to join Army for Trump's election security operation. We need you to help us watch them, not just on election day, but also during early voting and at the counting boards." Trump is going to win. Don't let them steal it. Go to defendyourballot.com and enlist today. And when we did a show a couple weeks ago about far-right extremist groups, I mentioned this group called American Contingency, which was started by a Green Beret. They've got members of the military in their group. They've got a countdown to the election on their website called Will You Be Ready? And then Channel 4 News out of the UK and Deutsche Welle, they each had short documentaries. They spent time with right-wing groups who've got a lot of guns and are doing a lot of shooting practice, getting ready for the election. But these are two news outlets that are outside of the country.
Yeah, I don't think that the media, by and large, and with some exceptions, there's been some exceptionally good reporting on the far right and its preparations for this, but taken as a whole, I don't think that the American media is preparing the public to the degree it should. I think that they should be canceling the traditional election night coverage to signal very clearly that we are very likely not to have a result on November 3rd, and that that is normal and not indicative of any skullduggery or, you know, improprieties. It's a terrifying situation, and you know, there's an escalation here that I think is important to note, because you know, back in 2012, there was this organization, True the Vote. They would send observers to polling places. It was thinly veiled voter intimidation, but at this point, this is now a presidential campaign, a presidential campaign that has a base that is that has proven itself to be extremely devoted and you know, not afraid to engage in violence, at least a portion of it. And they're encouraging them to intimidate voters during, as you said, early voting. We've seen it. I mean, the thing is that we just had a mob of Trump supporters outside of an early polling place in Virginia. And they obstructed the pathway for voters trying to get into the building. Poll workers had to move people indoors, which was contrary to their original COVID safety plan, to avoid the this crowd of Trump supporters. This is all illegal. And, you know, it's important to point out that, of course, both campaigns will have authorized poll observers. There will be Republicans and Democrats watching, you know, monitoring the balloting, and that's not what this is about. This is about getting a large group of, you know, angry Trump supporters convinced that something fraudulent is going on outside of polling places. And, of course, this is in conjunction with his long campaign to delegitimize mail-in voting, absentee balloting. So, you know, they're really pulling out all the stops to suppress the vote, no matter what mechanism you're using to vote. And let me just say one other thing. You mentioned this right-wing group. There is a coalition of civil rights groups. It's called Protect the Vote. And if people are interested in countering this, they might check that out. It's Protect the Vote. It's a project of Indivisible and other groups.
And for listeners who aren't familiar with what happened in Virginia, I just wanted to read from the New York Times. A group of Trump supporters waving campaign flags disrupted the second day of early voting in Fairfax. This was last Saturday, chanting four more years as voters entered a polling location and at one point forming a line that voters had to walk around outside the site. Officials were forced to open up a larger portion of the center to allow voters to wait inside away from the Trump enthusiasts. What are the laws around this? Do you know?
It is against federal law to inhibit voters, you know, to impede their movements around a polling place. I'm not familiar with all the state laws. I'm sure that there is a patchwork of additional state laws. On top of that, there are you know, states where there's open carry and various militia laws, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know the specifics of every local jurisdiction, but broadly speaking, it is always illegal to directly interfere with voters they're trying to cast a ballot.
Right. And according to this piece, election officials said the group stayed 100 feet from the entrance to the building, but people felt intimidated by what some saw as protesters. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the debate last night. And then the other question is, you know, you don't want to give people too much media attention, but this is very serious. So how do you think the media should focus on what is happening when it comes to intimidation and potential violence in the days leading up to the election? 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Well, we have a number of emails. I'll read a few and then we'd like you to comment, Joshua. Paul says, in today's news, I see no one questioning why the moderator, Chris Wallace, was so unprepared. He was nervous and slow to place limits. Were there no enforceable rules to this assault on both the moderator or Biden? And then John says, give each person 2 minutes for comments. Mute the microphone for the one not commenting. A lot of people are talking about this on social media. What are your thoughts, Joshua?
It's so there's two separate questions there. As for who thought that it was a good idea to do this freestyle debate where they each have 2 minutes to respond to the question, and then the rest of that 15-minute segment is supposed to be a back and forth. You know, I don't know how that was this singular blunder. I mean, a lot of the last night's disaster was entirely predictable. If you've seen Trump talk, you know, for the last 4 years, you know that this is the way he operates, right? A gusher of lies, a gusher of petty insults, which is not in any way illuminating. It doesn't help voters understand the candidate's positions, et cetera, et cetera. Going forward, it's clear that the Biden campaign, according to reports this morning, believes that they must follow through with the second and third presidential debates. I'd prefer not to have two more presidential debates. I joked on Twitter last night that, you know, they grounded the 737 MAX after two crashes, and we're going to have all three. So since they feel that that canceling these debates would reflect badly on their candidate, or that Trump would claim that it was a move born of fear, then I think they need to renegotiate the ground rules. And you know, I would like to see the, as your emailer said, I'd like to see the microphone cut off for the candidate who is not replying. And I would also like to see them lose the split screen, because you don't need to watch Trump sneering during Biden's responses. This is, you know, even if you cut off the audio, you still have this kind of childlike, you know, childish bullying and on your TV set.
Well, let's go to a caller. Let's hear from Ed in Berkeley. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. God. Oh, man. I had to take emotional breaks several times. First of all, I think the DNC made this big mistake with their negotiations with them setting it up. They're always a pushover. Anyway, that's background. The vote by mail was a big mistake to push that, because all the left people are saying, no, don't vote by mail. If he tries to pull an election night, whoever is ahead on the election night, then we're screwed. My second, another point is, the moderator and Joe should take bully handling training from middle school. I was looking it up last night, and it's excellent, and it's just what's needed. With reality TV, Trump is reality TV. He's turned the nation into that. And reality TV trumps everything else, pardon the expression, unless, and the unless is like some kind, you know, a good moderator. That moderator was not up to stuff. I don't know why he didn't stop the proceedings when Trump bulldozed over him. That, for his stature and his dad's stature, that was a lousy performance.
Hmm. Well, thank you for calling in, Ed. To your point about early voting, the reason why a lot of people like Ari Berman from Mother Jones is saying, if you can, vote early and vote in person if you feel safe. According to an NPR analysis, 550,000 ballots were rejected during this year's primaries because they either didn't have a signature, their signature did not match the one on record, or their ballot arrived too late. The majority of these ballots were discarded from younger voters and people of color. And so that's why so many people are saying, especially if you live in a battleground state, if you feel safe, to vote early and in person. Joshua, do you have anything to add on that?
No, just that I've been urging this the entire time. And I think that the issue is, yes, the issue is ballots being rejected, but the larger issue is that Trump has projected his strategy, his chaos strategy, and it hinges on him being ahead in-person voting on November 3rd, and then trying through various means, litigation and otherwise, to delegitimize the counting of absentee ballots. So it is really, really important if you are not in the highest risk group, if you live in a battleground state, put on a mask, go and vote in person early, so that if Democrats do win this election, it isn't the case that they're ahead, that they're behind on election night and then pull ahead afterwards, because that is going to be key to Trump's messaging strategy and attempts to get absentee to stop absentees from being counted. So I'll be voting in person with a mask on, and I think that it is not significantly more dangerous than going to the supermarket.
Mm. Well, and to this point, Joshua, again, this deserves so much more attention. Politico reports that Trump has hired dozens of lawyers from three major law firms. Thousands of volunteer attorneys and poll watchers have been recruited. Republicans are preparing pre-written legal pleadings that can be hurried to the courthouse the day after the election. Attorneys from non-battleground states, including California, New York, and Illinois, are being dispatched to more competitive areas and trained on local election laws. There's a 20-person team of lawyers overseeing this strategy, and they're focused on 17 states, including Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, it's important, though, to also note that the Biden campaign is assembling a huge legal team and significant war chest for litigation as well. And people should not think that their votes are going to be discounted. They should not become demoralized. We're going to have a major fight, but both sides are preparing for that fight.
Well, let's go to another caller, and thanks again for calling in, Ed. Martin in Hayward. Hi, Martin. Welcome to the show.
I have a couple of points. One is that it's totally understandable what Trump is doing in light of what we've discovered about his tax returns and what's the basis of the seeking his financial records in New York. It's very clear that he's in debt to foreign governments. He is going to be charged with federal crimes in New York, so the only way he can get out of all of that and not end up in jail is to basically try to seize control by violence for the country. The other thing I want to say is that contrary to the election that came down to hanging chads in Florida, the situation could be really different because in that election, the ACORN organization nationally was ready to go into the streets and was told to stand down by the democratically affiliated labor activists, and that's not going to happen this time. So I agree there's likely to be violence, but this time the left is going to be in the streets in much larger numbers than the right wing, and it's unfortunate, but Trump is taking us there because he knows that without staying in power, he will be in jail.
Hmm. Well, thank you for that, Martin. Joshua, what are your thoughts?
You know, I want to reiterate a point that I just made, which is, I feel like we as journalists have to walk a fine line. We have to raise the alarm here. Mm-hmm. We have to say this is a extremely dangerous situation. Trump is inciting violence around polling places. They are going to attempt this strategy of discounting millions of ballots. And at the same time, I worry about voters becoming demoralized and thinking, you know, this is all going to be rigged. There's going to be violence in the streets. And so I want to point out that there is a possible scenario here where things go relatively smoothly. Trump is a historically unpopular president. He has been underwater in terms of his approval rating for 4 years, the entire time in office. Joe Biden has maintained the most stable lead for any challenger in the history of modern polling, and it is possible that we will see Democratic voters react to this effort to suppress the vote by redoubling their commitment to voting and making a plan to vote and making sure that they're if they vote via absentee, they get it in early, they cross the T's and dot the I's, and, the Democrats could be ahead on election night and win by a significant margin. We shouldn't only focus on the potential for chaos. You know, this is an election that is winnable by Democrats if they put their heads down and do the work.
Well, to that point, Art writes in, I know that Working Families Party and elements of Black Lives Matter are organizing to get people ready for anything that might happen through Election Day and beyond. How is that effort going? Do you know what other groups are organizing or strategizing to deal with the entire spectrum of possible strategies to deal with Trump's attempted, disruption of the election?
So, I mentioned the organization Protect the Vote. That is a coalition of all these different groups, Common Cause and Indivisible, and a number of grassroots groups. I think there's dozens of them. Various groups have engaged in a series of exercises, war games, if you will, gaming out various scenarios and how to counter them. There is preparation underway, and this is one reason to be hopeful, is that, you know, Trump is a authoritarian who is not subtle in any way, and he's not going to catch anybody unawares. He's not going to surprise anybody. He's projected this strategy of delegitimizing mail-in ballots after encouraging his own people to vote in person for months. So, you know, one source of guarded optimism is that, you know, a lot of people have been preparing. The opposition party has to deal with, you know, all of his powers as an incumbent. But on the other hand, they have been preparing. They are well funded. They have a significant legal team put together. So, you know, it's going to be a rough ride, but we'll see.
And if you want to get involved with Protect the Vote, the website is protectthevote.net. There's also phone numbers for English, 866 our vote, O-U-R vote. There's Spanish phone numbers, Arabic, Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean. A number of languages are provided by this organization. It says, unfortunately, voters this year will face obstacles that have no place in a modern democracy. These impediments to voting will hit communities of color the hardest. You can make a major difference for voters in your community by signing up today. Again, if you want to get involved, it's protectthevote.net, and it says election protection is not affiliated with any political party. Thank you for that email, Art. I want to read a couple other emails. We're getting a lot here. Tim writes, when someone tells you who they are, believe them. The Maya Angelou quote seems accurate. Anybody still believe that this president won't start a civil war to stay in office or stay out of jail? Sheila writes, what debate? This was not a debate. This was an out of control, awful presentation, not moderated by a competent person. No more time should be given to such presentations. The country has now seen on full display the horror of what we've been living with since 2017. Leona writes, Trump is not running for president, but running from the law. And then Greg says, everyone, it's important to remember, it really comes down to those critical battleground states. Those few states will determine the electoral outcome. This is a good point, Joshua, because a lot of people are saying, you know, Hillary won by, I think it was 2 million, right? 2 million votes and still lost the electoral college. So this is, again, going to come down to, you know, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida could be in play this time.
Yeah, the map may look similar. It may hinge on those same states. It may not. I mean, this is a different map. Trump is much weaker in Texas. He's much weaker in Georgia. He's much weaker in Iowa. There's, of course, those states are going to matter, but it could be that other states are just as important, or other states are primed to swing to the Democrats. What we've seen in the past is that polling errors tend to be correlated across states. So if the polls are off, they're probably going to be off in the same direction. I don't think that we're going to look at the same. We could see a polling error. I don't think we're going to see the same one as we did in 2016. Pollsters have adjusted the way that they compose the electorate with more non-college whites, place more emphasis on the divide among white voters between those with a college degree and those without. It always comes down to a handful of swing states, and that's a powerful argument against the Electoral College, of course, because both candidates have little reason to appeal to voters in, say, 35 states.
Right. Right. And again, it comes down to massive voter turnout in those states. Joshua, what were your thoughts about Biden? I mean, he tried to get in there as much as he could. It was very difficult to talk because Trump just wouldn't stop talking. Trump was also attacking Biden. Biden, you know, at one point said, shut up, man. He said, you're the worst president America's ever had. What did you think overall about Joe Biden?
You know, I think Biden is almost fortunate that Trump's bluster is dominating people's reactions. I didn't think he looked aggressive or strong, and obviously that was Trump's strategy, is to just be a domineering bully. But I think Biden, you know, did not have a great performance, and is lucky that the focus really isn't on him, you know? Mm-hmm. Trump's theatrics were such that is the dominant storyline the next day. And the other thing that I'd point out is that, you know, most people don't watch these debates. And the way that they are reported the next day, the analyses, the pundits columns, that is how many of us get an impression of how these debates went. So, very little focus on Biden. It's mostly about Trump being a buffoon.
Wow. Well, to your point, I just looked it up. The Hollywood Reporter reports that 28 million viewers watched this on the major broadcasts, which is a decline of 36% from 2016. But we should also note that a lot of people now are watching these debates online.
Yes, that is true, although, you know, certainly a lot of people watch them online in 2016. This is a very different election because most voters are locked in, and most voters have been locked in for a while. There's very few undecideds, and, you know, if you know who you're going to vote for, why even watch? I mean, it was the first night of the baseball playoffs. I think there's other sporting events going on. I'm not surprised the viewership is down, given how many people are 100% certain of who they're going to vote for, and also given the fact that the Donald Trump show has, you know, been on for 4 years, and you know, those shows get boring after a while. You know, his ratings declined when he was on The Apprentice as well, from the first season to the last, and you know, he's been doing rallies. It's always the same with Donald Trump. You know, you're going to get the same thing whether it's a coronavirus briefing or a campaign rally or a debate. It's the same shtick.
Well, Joshua, thank you so much for joining us and offering your thoughts on what we saw last night. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Rose. I appreciate it.
Joshua Holland is a contributor to The Nation and the host of We've Got Issues. We're going to take a quick break, and after a break, we will talk about the devastating fires in Northern California. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.